The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 14th of August. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. How are you all keeping? Missed you all. Had a lovely week off. Thanks very much to Donald Kavanagh for his expertise in sitting on. And just to let you know now that we are open for business this Monday morning. 07491 25000. If you want to get involved in the show, 07491 25000. 00353 749 125000. If you're calling from outside the Republic, your WhatsApps and texts more than welcome to 086 60 25000. Again, 00353 866 25000 if you're outside the Republic. And emails from anywhere to comments at highlandradio.com. I direct you towards Twitter, but I don't check them. but you can. X or whatever they call it now. We'll pick them up there as well. All right. Okay, let's have a run through the newspapers this Monday morning. Let's start with the Derry People Donegal News. Donegal had the highest rate of all alcohol-related hospitalisations in 2022, according to a stark new report. Findings by the Health Research Board reveals Donegal had the second highest rate per 100,000 of the population of alcohol-related psychiatric hospital admissions last year, followed by Sligo. Leitrim had the highest rate. So it's a northwest issue particularly. Donegal was also among the counties with the greatest number of cases, 467 cases in 2022, receiving treatment for alcohol as the main problem substance. In 2022, Donegal and Leitrim had the highest rates per 100,000 of the population for first admissions to psychiatric hospitals per units for alcohol-related diagnosis. The detail is contained in a new report by the Health Research Board. The report gives a county-level breakdown of alcohol profiles, which show alcohol-related liver disease rose across most counties in Ireland in the last 5 years. What is happening that it seems to be a particularly particular problem here in Donegal and the Northwest more generally, both Sligo, Leitrim and Donegal featuring in the top three in those categories there. The Derry News this morning, their lead story is as follows. A woman who sadly died following a road traffic collision on the Colmore Road in Derry in the early hours of Sunday morning. A report was received at approximately 1 a.m. of a one-vehicle road traffic collision. PSNI officers attended the scene with colleagues from the Northern Ireland Ambulance Service, but sadly the woman in her 30s passed away at the scene. Three other people were taken to hospital for treatment for their injuries there. On to the national newspapers now. Let's start with the Irish Independent. They have a story about the price of a pint set to increase from today. Publicans have warned that a 4 cent hike in the price of a pint from today, taken with an imminent VAT increase, threatens to prove a tipping point for the 2.5 billion euro Irish pub sector. Diageo will increase the price of its stout and beer products by 4 cent from today, just 6 months after a 12 cent hike in February. But Diageo obviously aren't too worried about it because it's their product that is driving people to the pubs. And I presume they feel that the sector can absorb another 4 cent or else they wouldn't shoot themselves in the foot, would they? However, reading on, the 4 cent hike, when taken with tax and other costs, result in the price of a pint rising by up to 10 cent. Politicians warned that the combination of the beer price hike, the imminent jump in VAT from 9 cent to 13.5%, and ongoing inflationary costs now threaten to hit the industry hard. So is that enough, or maybe you've stopped socialising already, or is this further increase enough to make you stop going? I think it depends where you are in the country, because I think a pint around here, what, about 5.50, is it? But if you go down to Dublin, or for example, you can pay 6, 7, 8 euro for a pint. So it could be a tipping point there. Maybe it's more affordable here, or maybe you feel that enough is enough and you're not going to go into the pub. What do you think? 086 60 25000. Vintners Federation of Ireland Cork branch official Michael O'Donovan said the beer price hike could not have been more badly timed. My concern, he said, is that when you take everything together, it threatens to represent a tipping point for the sector. And there does come a tipping point, and it's interesting to see that phrase used. It's one we've used on this programme previously, because in terms of cost, eventually it does, there does come that point where people change their habits. A couple of stories about learner drivers in the papers today. Let's look at the one in the Irish Times. And I wonder, has this been your experience? Driving testers who nitpicking or were nitpicking. I'll start that again. I'm out of practice, forgive me. Driving testers who were nitpicking and another who reacted poorly to a learner driver forgetting where they parked their car before the test were among complaints received by the Road Safety Authority in recent months. In one case, a person sitting their driving test later complained that their examiner had scolded them for whizzing past cars despite the fact that they were travelling at the speed limit. In another, well, maybe they're going a little bit close to the cars. In another complaint, a learner driver said after they cut out three times during a hill start, the tester proceeded to then shout at them to work the clutch, while that made them cry. The learner driver said when they returned to the test centre, the examiner said, "So obviously you failed." One person complained that before a test in Finglas, Dublin, the tester made a big deal of the learner driver forgetting where they'd parked the car. Are people getting very soft that they spoke to me and made me cry and they were angry because they didn't like where I parked my car? Well, the learner driver said while the theory portion of the test went well, things began to go downhill when they left the test centre to start the drive. When we stepped outside, the examiner asked me where my car was parked. Due to my nervousness, I forgot the exact location of my car, they wrote. The person said their tester said that was a bad start to the test. I don't know. I was expecting, I didn't read all of that article. I read the headline and I was expecting it to sort of be, you know, really shocking stuff. But it seems it's just people maybe being a little bit oversensitive. I don't know. Have you had any experiences like that? Let us know. 086 60 25000. 086 60 25000. Good morning to Michael and Lisa, who are joining us to watch the live stream today. A reminder for you that we do stream the show in its entirety. You can watch most of our guests and all of me, well, from the waist up, by going to our social media, YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, or on our Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and where else? On Twitter also as well. What do you think about this story in the Irish Daily Mail today? A Garda Síochána has been criticised for its strict dress code after three cadets were sent home from its training college for having tattoos amid a recruitment crisis in the force. Now, is this something that would bother you? I mean, in this day and age, lots of people have tattoos. I don't know, do they have the same, they never really had with me, but some people would have maybe turned their nose up a little bit of tattoos or thought it reflected on a person's character. That did exist, if it doesn't still do with some. Does it really matter if a Garda has tattoos? Now, maybe face tattoos can look quite intimidating. I don't know. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I think they possibly do. But should we really be sending trainees home from Garda College because they have tattoos? Well, as Commissioner Drew Harris desperately struggles to meet his recruitment targets, a situation involving a number of trainees at the Garda Training College in Templemore, County Tipperary, has sparked a new debate on the force's outdated views on tattoos. At least three Garda hopefuls who had begun their studies at the start of this month were sent home after it was discovered they had ink designs on their lower arms, which would be visible if they were wearing short-sleeved uniforms. The trainees were among 175 recruits who arrived at Templemore for induction on July 31st. So do you think that's going too far? Is that OTT? Now, maybe on the lower portion of the arm. Does it depend on what the tattoo depicts? I'm not sure. Like, it's not necessarily what was on the arm that the reason they were sent home. But in this day and age, do you think that's unreasonable? 086 60 25000. 086 60 25000. I mean, sometimes nowadays, not having a tattoo is almost what might make you stand out. But anyway, three Garda sent home. Don't know what they're going to do about that now. Tattoo removal, is that easy? I don't know. Don't have a tattoo just currently anyway. The Irish Daily Star. Justice Minister Helen McEntee must fix Dublin's street crime crisis or quit, a leading councillor has warned. Now, before I read on here, I understand Dublin is a big place. It's an important place and it's awful to see any violence. But we are seeing violence and on the Community Garda information on the news here. You will hear regularly of serious assaults. There was one in Ardrar recently. There's been assaults in Letterkenny. There was a couple of assaults in Inishowen. It happens on a regular basis. And I wonder if people who are the victims of these assaults, especially if the perpetrators aren't found, are wondering, like, what's going on here? This is in Donegal, it's in every county of the country, but there seems to be this notion that because a tourist was assaulted, and it's terrible, it should never happen, that all of a sudden this is a new problem, that this is something that is a disgrace and you need to put a million Gardaí on the streets of Dublin. I don't think it really talks to the overall issue that we do have of assaults right across the country, not least here in Donegal as well. And I think the story is kind of happening in a summer vacuum, as if, you know, if you stop tourists getting assaulted, that fixed the problem. And unfortunately, because of the reactionary nature of the Garda, lots and lots of resources are being sent to Dublin to fix this problem that's in the papers and on the news. When really, you know, we got one extra guard up here in Donegal recently. There is a problem here. And I just feel for those who've been the victims of assault in the recent past here, who feel like maybe they're being forgotten somewhere in this whole conversation. If you think that's a point, or if you think I'm as far out as that light has, let me know. 086 60 25,000. Well, following on from these comments from the councillor, he said, the minister who is totally responsible for Angada Síochána Síochána should either resign or come up with a robust plan, Manix Flynn told The Star. And in a hard-hitting interview, the veteran councillor also said he believes Gardaí on the ground are not being allowed to take on street gangs because their bosses are more interested in statistics and the Garda computer system pulse. They're not being allowed to do their job. They're not being managed to within an inch, or sorry, they are being managed to within an inch of their lives, he claimed about Gardaí. But as I say, I don't think that's a proper conversation if you're just talking about a couple of instances in Dublin. The RTE story back in the papers today. RTE was last night told to clean up its act as a matter of urgency if it wants to retain public trust and confidence. The warning came from Sinn Féin TD Imelda Munster as a member of both the Dáil Public Accounts and Media Committee. She said the fact RTE dropped €3.7 million in TV licence fees in 6 weeks after the Ryan Tuberty pay scandal broke should set alarm bells ringing within Montrose and the government. But she also expressed disappointment at the failure of new Director General Kevin Backhurst to provide Oireachtas Committee investigating the station with certain documents they needed. She fumed, it is just not good enough to say we can have these documents in the autumn. Autumn could mean the end of September or October. There should be no excuse in my mind for these important documents not to be provided to us by the time the Dáil returns. And where are the reports? There is a lull in this story because there are a couple of reports that people are maybe given a bit of space to be concluded. But the public should get to see them. The Dáil rep should get to see them. I think not paying your TV licence is kind of addictive. And I think if lots of people, as they are seeing many people not do it, they're going to go, well, why should I do it? And I think, on reflection, and I have no real gripe with Ryan Tuberty, I didn't really like his presentation of The Late Late Show, but that's just as a viewer, it's nothing personal. I think his return to radio is a problem for RTE because they talk about trying to remove a culture, and unfortunately, Ryan Tuberty will always be the poster boy of that culture. Even now, it seems he hasn't paid back that overpay yet to RTE. So people are sort of saying, well, if he's holding on to that money, why shouldn't I hold on to my money? We talked about this before, but no harm mentioning it again, because it seems become an increasingly a problem. I'm not sure it's an issue at the moment here in the Northwest, but let me know if it is. But families could face delays of over a week to buried loved ones in future due to a shortage of priests. It comes following a recent admission from the Bishop of Galway and Clonfert, Michael Dignam, predicting that over the next decade there'll be just 20 priests to serve over 40 parishes in the Galway diocese alone. There's a great work ongoing, by the way, in this part of the world to predict where the church is going and how it will manage. We spoke to one of the people behind that recently. We might get that person back on again, actually, to see how that is progressing. But anyway, according to Father Declan McInerney, parish priest of Clonfert, the reduction in priests across the county, this is Galway, will impact on all services provided by the clergy. Father McInerney said the demands on the reduced number of clergy in the diocese are huge and it may impact on certain ceremonies taking place, and we all know what they might be. But as I say, I'm not sure if we're seeing those delays here at the moment, but unless something is done, it feels almost inevitable. Okay, just a reminder for you one more time of those numbers that ring in your ears, and I'm sorry, but people tune into the show for the first time all the time, and we want everyone involved in the programme. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts, or call 074 91 25,000. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Neil.
Jim's on with us. Hi, Jim. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I think if you have a radio on in the background, you might need to turn it down, Jim, because it might become distracting with the echo.
Yeah, there's no radio.
Well, it's just an echo. Okay. Anyway, Jim, you're frustrated enough, perhaps, without me adding to it. You have appealed. You've appealed to people planning a road trip in their mobile home. What's your appeal to them?
Yeah, recently I've noticed quite an increase in mobile homes coming around the area, actually near Trina Bay, northwest Donegal, down below Dunloe. And don't get me wrong, I think it's great to have all these visitors coming. The Wild Atlantic Way is getting lots of publicity and attracting a lot of people, and that's great. I'd love to meet them myself. But I'm quite concerned. Recently, I was saying to Caroline there that in May, I was up in the northwest of Scotland, and it's become a real big problem there. Big, big mobile homes, not camper vans, which many of which aren't really much wider than a normal car, but these big, big mobile homes are causing lots of traffic jams. It's been a problem in the Isle of Skye for quite a long time. Loch Inver area, it was chock-a-block in May, and I've noticed outside my front window quite a few really big ones, and I've encountered three of them in the last 2 weeks where I had to do really, really difficult reversing and squeezing to get out their way. And it's just a little bit of a worry because I think it's going to become quite a big issue.
I've got two words that I think are the root cause of all of these problems, Jim.
Yeah.
Google Maps. I think people are following Google Maps and they're sending them up narrow roads. I think they've got a segment for cycling, a segment for walking and driving. I think they should have a little tab that if you're towing a caravan, because I think people blindly now follow their sat navs and it's sending them up the shortest route, which is not really suitable for towing a trailer. That's just my guess at it, because I'll tell you, if I say, for instance, I would travel back and forwards from Downings, and you can see the instant regret on people towing a caravan as Google Maps sends them up over Loch Salt. It's just a road really not suitable for it. I think that's the problem. What do you think, Jim? Have you any other theories?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I would say that's, well, we'll never actually know, but I would say that would be more than half the problem. I didn't get jammed the other day there, but I noticed coming down the caravan road, which, if you know, Dunloe, there was a caravan getting pulled by a car, obviously, but also a mobile home. And these guys came down that funny wee single-track road. And I thought, why are you coming down there when, you know, Dunloe is further up the road? I'm sure they get diverted off that way. But I think there's more to it than that. I think the attraction of the Wild Atlantic Way, which is fabulous, like I said, look, people are coming up that way and they're thinking, oh, I think I want to get down a wee bit nearer the waterside. I think I'll head on down this way and I'll head on down that way. Now, for example, if you were in the Dunloe area and you wanted to go to Mahery, the road's not too bad out to Mahery. I would say it's pretty okay. Big trucks go up and down it. But if you went beyond Mahery up to the mountain road, as I call it, to Falkirk, I mean, my wife would never even drive that in an ordinary car. So I think maybe, you know, a bit of signage at tactical points by the council saying not suitable for large mobile homes would help a wee bit. The Wild Atlantic Way themselves could put up signs. It's a combination. And, you know, some people are smart. Some people are good drivers. Most people think they're really good drivers. They actually think they're better than they are. Jump in a big mobile home and charge about. And it's just, like I said earlier, I've seen it becoming a real problem in other parts of the countryside, in other parts of countries. And I think it could be a real difficult thing here. Also, there is quite a lot of people living in Donegal. It's quite a dense population, although it's rural. Up in the northwest of Scotland, there's a fraction of the people, so there isn't a number of cars going about. You don't get tractors with guys trying to go on with their work. I noticed on the website there a lot of people were talking about tractors, which is silly because tractors are tractors. It's a farming community and they've got to go on with their life and you just live with that. That's fine. But, you know, like I said, the roads, they're very tight. And about 2 years ago, I myself actually pulled a car, not a mobile home because I couldn't, but I pulled a car out of a ditch down at the bottom of the road here because the guy went down the wrong way, reversed into a ditch and he was completely stuck.
Yeah.
You get a lot of nasty big, ditches here, and that could be catastrophic.
Yeah, so some discreet signing then might be the way forward. And I don't think anyone fancies backing a caravan half a kilometre down a road either. Backing it into your little space at the campsite's problematic enough for some. Do you think caravans are getting bigger? There's some lovely, lovely trailers on the road at the moment. That's perhaps not helping.
Yeah, I haven't really seen that many caravans about. It's more like these big mobile homes. Caravans are quite complicated. It's more the big mobile homes. I think the guys renting the mobile homes could maybe do a wee bit of work. They could maybe, provide some more clear information to folk who are renting them. That wouldn't solve the problem of the people that own their own ones and come over. But there's more of them coming. It could be quite serious at some point if a road gets totally jammed and there's an incident,
Yeah. Okay. All right. As you say, it's just a little bit of common sense, perhaps, and a little bit of signage. And also, where it is the problem, don't follow the old sat nav blindly either. Jim, lovely to chat to you. Thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourself. That is Jim there. Do you agree, disagree, or have anything to add? 086 60 25,000. I want to mention that Father Sean Doherty, formerly of this parish, newly ordained, of course, is celebrating the Vigil Mass of Solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in St. Eunan's Cathedral tonight. It's at 7 p.m. Father Sean will impart his first blessing to all present, and refreshments will be provided. Car parking will be available. Hugh Duffy Car Park. It's opposite Skulmorrigan Small. Cathedral car parks by two. Car park behind the cathedral. A warm welcome extended to all. So happy to mention that. That is tonight, just to recap, in St. Eunan's Cathedral at 7 p.m. Now, just before we welcome our next guest onto the show, just to let you know that coming up after 11, our regular feature, Monday Focus. This week, we focus on the 25th anniversary of the devastating Omagh bomb. And we have a number of guests lined up to reflect on that moment, that if you were an adult of or alive at a certain age, you will remember where you were. You will remember, have vivid memories of it, is really what I'm trying to say. And if you wish to share those, you can join in that conversation as well. So maybe you were in the area at the time, or it impacted you in some way or other. Feel free to share. As I say, our Monday focus will be on the 25th anniversary of the Omagh bomb. You know the contact details if you want to, impart anything. I don't want to lead. I just want to leave it open to you. Driving instructor listening in from London, good morning to you. Many years ago, when you were taking your test in Donegal, if you did something wrong while doing your test, they automatically failed you and told you to make your way back to the depot there. And then my friend asked the examiner what he did wrong. So he pulled over, put the examiner out of the car, and he had to walk back. It was the time before mobile phones. Things have changed after that. I wonder how that panned out. If you're listening and you put that examiner out of the car all those years ago, did you eventually pass your test, I wonder? Anyway, back to more modern times. Katrina joins us now. How are you getting on, Katrina?
Not too bad, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. Now, you did your test in Donegal recently. What was your experience?
So it was my second time doing the test, and had plenty of lessons, plenty of experience. And on the morning of the test, away up the road I went, and thought I got on very, very well. And I was very aware that I was kept out a way long time. And I was like, geez, the traffic wasn't even bad, or there was none of that carry on. And came back and he says, well, sorry, Katrina, but you failed. And I was like, on what? And he was like, silly things, like, coasting, using the clutch too much. They kept me driving for 47 minutes. And I rebooked my test straight away then. And the next time I done it, I passed with flying colours.
Did you request a different tester, or was it the same tester?
No, I requested a different tester.
You'd spent enough time with the first one.
Yeah, I kind of did. My driving at that stage, I had plenty of lessons done with the instructor that I'd done my lessons with. Mm. And he was like, Katrina, I see no reason why this will not happen today. And I was like, and it was a significant day. It was my wee boy's birthday. So I was like, imagine I'll pass my test on my wee boy's birthday. Mm. And all happy out up the road. And I mean, Greg, the disappointment, I was, oh my God, I was so disappointed because I knew I'd done the work. I knew. But he literally just kept me out until I made enough blue marks. And there's three.
And just so people understand, it's an accumulative situation, isn't it, Katrina? So, you know, if you make a minor error, there's a mark there and a mark if you do it again. But you're saying the amount of time you were out, you surpassed the fail rate.
Yeah, so you're allowed 12 blue marks, pink ones. I'm not sure. Maybe it's 12 pink and so many blue, but you're allowed no red. But that was my story, and then I rebooked the test and went to the same area, but just asked for a different tester. And I had a lovely gentleman tested me, and I says to him, I said, I'm a wee bit nervous. He's like, listen, I'm not here to fail you. The only person that's going to fail you is you.
Right.
And I was like, that's actually quite nice to say, because it's true. And I went down to do my questions till I was finished with my test was 26 minutes.
Wow.
And I didn't even hear him tell me that I passed, because I stalled. And I was like, damn it. But he says, you know, well done, Katrina, you passed. I didn't hear him. And I put my head in my hand. And he's like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I failed. And he went, no, you passed. And I jumped off the chair. I nearly came across the table to him. He was like, no, we'll settle for a handshake. Okay. And like, I was just, he was so nice. And he was like, so I explained to him what had happened previous. And he said that the person that was there previous to him had been moved on,
right,
that he was just failing everybody.
Which impacts, it's a huge impact. We had someone in the house recently that sat their test and passed it first time, thankfully. It's a nervous time because for everyone, the person and everyone around them, because it means so much, particularly in a rural area, you know, your freedom, your ability to get to and from work, drop kids off and on. But anyway, you got your wee child their birthday present. It was just a little late. Not it.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? Like, I'm a few years living where I am now, but where I lived previous, I didn't need to drive. So I was quite late on in drive. And I have no qualms in it. I passed my test at 41.
Well done.
So, you know, I didn't give up. I just kept going.
And it's made some difference since, I would say.
Oh, well, it definitely has. Like, we have two children here, and one of our wee boys has autism and a lot of appointments, and you need to drive.
Yeah.
And I needed to drive. So that was what made me drive.
Yeah, that was your drive to drive, I get you. Okay, well, listen, it's great to hear you're on the road with your full licence. And it just goes to show, you just wonder what the first person's motivation was, you know what I mean, to keep you out so long and what have you. Your second experience, so much more different. Okay, well, all's well that ends well, although you're out of pocket and time,
Greg.
That being said, so that's
I know, I know. But anyway, it's money well spent. I have my license now, and it's so important to have it. Like, and you just put it behind you now. I didn't give up. I wasn't going to give up. He was not going to beat me.
No.
And I got it.
End. All right. Listen, well done. All's well, as I say, that ends well. Well done, Katrina. Happy motoring. Safe motoring to you and yours.
Thank you,
Take
Greg.
Care. Bye-bye.
Talk
Lovely to
you
chat
later.
To you.
Bye.
Congratulations to Clonmany Festival on a great week. Some crowds at it from a Clonmany listener. They say Clonmany Street is hard to beat. Yeah, I'm sure it is. I've never been to the Clonmany Festival. I think it comes often after the Mary from Dunloe Festival and other festivals. And I'd just be not exhausted, that's ridiculous, but partied out. That's an exaggeration, but it just doesn't suit. But I'd love to go maybe next year. Hi, Greg. Time the Garter were back on the beaten Letterkenny. Never mind Dublin. People fighting in shopping centres with knives. No 10 million given out to Donegal. It's pathetic. And that's why I want the broader conversation, because all of the Garter resources to keep the media quiet is going to be focused on the Dublin problem. And that is, I think, doing the rest of the country a disservice where there are issues as well. I find it difficult to understand why so much emphasis is put on the media of how much alcoholics are in the Northwest, but no survey done on why the RTE saga has disappeared off the airwaves. Well, it hasn't disappeared off the airwaves. I mentioned it just today. What element of it do you think needs to be explored more? because I suspect I think you might be a regular texter on that issue, and I'd be really interested in like what part of it do you feel is off the radar, or what should be talked about currently that isn't being talked about. In one local bar, can I say Maggie's Bar? Can't I? It's $4.80 for a pint. That's all right, isn't it? Okay, that's exactly what we're going to talk about now, because I do believe that there is still good value in pubs in the Northwest for the most part. I mean, obviously, there's going to be outliers. You know, if you're down visiting Dublin, if you're in Temple Bar or what have you, you know, you're going to be paying 7 or 8 or even 9 euro at times for a pint. It's different up here, ranging probably from 4.80 to, you know, 6 or under 6, 5.80, I don't know. But all the while, the prices are increasing. And we've talked about a tipping point on costs on this show before, and it's been referenced in the papers again today, that are we getting to a tipping point in terms of the cost of a pint and whether people will go out or not. Councillor Martin Harley owns Harley's Cheers in the Bala Buffet, but is also treasurer of the Vintners Association of Ireland in Donegal. And he's on the show now. Good morning, Martin. Thank you very much for joining us.
Morning, Greg.
Right, okay. I mean, do you think it is important to sort of point out the different prices in different parts of the country? I mean, obviously, you know, there's pressures all around, but I think there is still better value, isn't there, outside of the capital and maybe up in other urban areas in the price of a pint?
Oh, there is definitely in most parts of west of Ireland. You'll still get a pint of Guinness for, say, under 5.50, and most of them, whereas if you go into the capital, you're looking at average of 6.50, as you say, up to maybe 9 euros in Temple Bar, which is crazy, like, for tourists coming into the country, because that's the message they go back with to their own countries with, and it's putting people off coming to Ireland. So, and I know from so many years ago when price of drink was a lot cheaper, and I mean, over in Liverpool one time, and I mean, talking to a man there, and he said, he said, I'd love to go to Ireland. He says, but he says, Dublin's too expensive. He says, I can't afford to go. Mm. And that's maybe 15, 20 years ago. So, but there's still, with the increase imminent, with the Irish open up their prices again now for a second time this year, it's a difficult time for business and what will happen, I feel.
Yeah, because up here, Martin, just to set the scene, if you don't mind, you know, you still have the huge costs to show sports, you still have the big insurance costs, you've still got staff costs, and you have less of a footfall. So whilst the price of a pint is less up here, you do face, and the rates and all that kind of stuff, you do face many of the charges that the other pubs that we're talking of do, that are charging big money. So it's all relative, isn't it? There is a tipping point for business. So Diageo have already put it up 12 cents. They're going to put it up another 4. What do you think the impact of that might be?
Well, as you say, the overheads are the same whether you're in Dublin or in Donegal. And with the oil costs going up there lately again, and the ESB costs, not to mention the price of Sky TV, because people come in to watch a football match. The minimum price for Sky in a pub is almost around 700 a month, which is, wow, it's almost up to 9,000 per year. And that's just for, and it's okay. You might get an odd big game that you get a credit in for, but overall, I mean, you're not going to really, no disrespect to the Brentford or Wolves, but if you have Brentford and Wolves playing, you're not going to have too many in your bar watching it.
No.
And you're still paying the shirts. I mean, that's the problem, you see. So it is going to be difficult. Like, what really is happening is driving people into off-licenses, I feel, and people are drinking home, which is not a healthy environment to be in either. I think it's more when people are able to go out and enjoy the night out and get the experience of the Irish scene and meet people and talk to people. I think it's more, I think it's very important for...
Well, we saw statistics today showing, you know, the level of issues caused by alcohol is very high in Donegal, Leitrim and Sligo. And much of that probably, as you say, is being bought in off licences. But, I mean, bars are having to change then how they do business, when they open, how many days they open. Because, you know, there was a time your weekend trade would perhaps mean you could open, you know, for the regulars all week. But those days for a lot of pubs are gone now. That opening hours and what have you for some are changing.
Oh, they're changing, yeah. And we made that decision a number of years ago. And at the time, people said, oh, it looks very bad. You closed a few days a week. And I said, well, to keep your overheads down and keep your staffing levels at a tight, we had for your margins, you had to do it. And what I've seen now is the years have gone by, and more publishers have come to me and said, you made the right decision at the time. And a lot of them are doing the same now. And you're seeing now where pubs are there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Mm.
Which is not good, Ed, because if you've people coming, like say a town like Ballybuffet or Letterkenny, where a few people coming stay in hotels during the week, that they have nowhere to go then, they have to stay in the hotels. Where part of the experience was going out around the pubs and maybe a bit of music on some of the places. So something has to change there.
Do you think there are many pubs around the county now? Because we've seen a huge reduction in the amount of pubs and a huge increase in the amount of off-licences. And the reason that's relevant is because, if I'm not mistaken, pub licences can be transferred to off-licences. So you could argue if you see a new off-licence pop up, it could be down to the fact that a pub somewhere else has closed. But anyway, do you think many more pubs across the county or across the region are on the brink of closure now, or are they making the changes you've made to say sustainable?
Some of them have made these changes, and unfortunately, this is going to push them over the edge. That's what I feel. I feel there'll be more. Okay, a lot of them might stay. You won't see it imminent, but I would think once you take the first and come into the 1st of January of 2024, you'll see a lot more people making that decision. So it'll be over the next 6 to 9 months that you'll see the change, and you'll see a lot more premises closed. So it's sad to see it, like, and that's what, unfortunately, that's. That's the decisions. It used to be a saying that a yard of a bar was as good as a farm of land, but I'll tell you this much, neither two industries are doing very well at the moment, so I don't know what for the future for the Irish publicans is bleak at the moment.
Well, what do you think one of the solutions might be? Maybe decoupling this 9% argument from hotels, so that maybe pubs and restaurants are treated differently to give them some sort of an advantage. Could that be a help or a solution? Well, it wouldn't be a solution because it would only maintain the status quo for those in certain sectors. But, what would you like to see the government do to back business here then?
Well, some kind of a, suppose they brought in incentives during COVID. Suppose they give a lot of support to publicans, and I feel that something like that needs to happen again. Needs to be some support put in place to encourage the pubs to stay open, because not alone, it's not just the publicans, it's the staff that's going to lose jobs as well as the job losses. And to me, it doesn't make sense for the government to drive more people onto the unemployment register.
All right, okay.
So to support the publicans, to me, that would be. It keeps the jobs in those places for the people in place, so that's important.
Yeah, okay. Before I let you go, I saw some amazing pictures and videos from the Twin Towns yesterday. Hugely successful colour run, is that what it's called, Martin? Sorry to switch subjects, but it was seemed such a wonderful and positive day. I didn't want to let you go without mentioning it.
Yeah, we had a fantastic day. We started the colour run in the Twin Towns in 2017. In memory of our daughter Kim, who lost her life in 2014. And really what it is, we started as just a family fun day, and that's what it's been. And yes, it was such a great success. Unfortunately, we lost with none 20, 21 and 22, so it was great to get it back up and running again yesterday. And it was a hugely successful day, over 500 people.
Brilliant.
Done. It's more a walk than a run, but plenty
that's
of
just yourself,
kids
man.
Loved it. Yeah, that's just me. But now the kids, had a great day, and it's such
brilliant. Some brilliant
weather
images.
And
I'm sure for you and yours, it's a whole mixture of emotions as well. But it must be lovely to see the fun and the delight on other people's faces, and great seats so well supported.
Yeah, and so Kim would have loved that, and that's the important thing.
Isn't that what it's all
and
about?
And it's really, I talked to a few people last night as well, and they had lost children as well. In the past, and they said, and I said to them, I said, this is for all the kids that we've all lost, and that's the important thing. It's It may be in Kim's name, but it's where everybody can get a bit of fun. So that's important.
All right, Martin. Listen, thanks very much for that. Okay. I appreciate you commenting on both. That's Councillor Martin Harley there. All right. Good morning to Anna, John, Beth, Michael, Rosemary, Margaret, all of you, Audrey, Lisa, Tanya, watching our show live across social media. Mary Jo commented, not paying your TV licence will not fix the RTE issue, I'm afraid. It will only come back on the lower class people. I'm not really sure how that might work, but I understand your point of view. So as you would know, it's going back a long time now since we discussed the issue, or raised the issue, or tried to raise the issue of the impact artificial intelligence will have on education. I mean, it's going to have impacts on all of our lives, but it particularly in using ChatGPT in its early stages, it was clear to me that particularly in the area of education, it's going to create a particular problem. And I said at that time that the Department of Education, or whichever department is relevant, it's relevant to, needs to be on top of this because it's coming. Well, now we read that third level students are facing the prospect of more oral exams as colleges grapple with the threat posed to academic standards by artificial intelligence platforms such as ChatGPT. The possibility of a return to greater use of in-person written exams with less reliance on continuous assessment has also been mooted in one university. Well, Brian Mooney's a regular guest on this show and he's accepted our invite again. He's a guidance counsellor and Irish Times education columnist. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, is this something, I mean, it's inevitable that this is a concern. Do you think the solutions being discussed here are the only way forward, really?
Well, look, Greg, I mean, technology changes all the time and how we all research content changes all the time. But ultimately, what colleges and everything from, you know, literally the school system the whole way up is trying to assess is students' own ability to actually analyze content, to be able to present content in a way that shows that they understand the topic. And obviously with platforms, AI platforms, ChatGPT, as you mentioned, you know, it becomes less and less easy to be able to assess students' own input. And this is a perennial problem. Now, obviously, there are certain disciplines that I'm aware that, you know, oral exams where students will sit in front of a panel of lecturers and be asked a whole range of issues to actually be, show that their complete competence. The area of medical and paramedical is quite popular, but having the resources to be able to do that would be enormously difficult. Returning to the exam hall where the student is sitting there having to write the exam in front of you, you know, obviously that bypasses any benefit they could get from ChatGPT. But it is a huge problem because effectively, you know, AI is part of all our lives and it's going to become more and more prevalent as we go forward. So obviously we need to be able to educate students in a way that they are able to integrate it effectively into their own. It's not that we don't want students using it. It's a question of how can we assess the student's own individual content? And it is a problem. And the article by Catherine Donnelly in today's Indo is quite good. She has comprehensively covered how all of the universities are looking at this. And it is a real, real issue.
Yeah, what about, well, we'll get to the, we'll start off with the resources then. Let's just say they did go ahead with more, you know, in-person stuff, right, more oral exams. Like, are the resources there to actually do that en masse? I can't imagine they are.
There aren't. They aren't. That's the problem, Greg. That, you know, at the end of the day, we've seen how over the last number of years the pupil-teacher ratio at third level has increased substantially. And effectively, there is huge pressure from within the academic community, and quite rightly so, that standards would be maintained and we would return to the staffing levels that we would have had only maybe 10, 15 years ago. And that's only bringing us back to what we had. The capacity to get three members of staff with a competence in an area or two or whatever to sit in front of, you know, a series of students, interviewing them for a half an hour or an hour or whatever to ensure that the depth of understanding they would have of a topic. Now, in areas like medicine and veterinary, it's quite useful because you do want your doctor to actually really know and not just to cover that area of the content that, you know, they needed to get through an exam. So, you know, yes, it is important and it is used. But as you say, how do we provide the resources to be able to actually staff that kind of intense one-to-one stuff of individual interviews,
yeah.
as quite apart from bringing people back into exam halls with a pen and setting them a written paper and seeing what they actually know.
Yeah, because, I mean, I presume it's always happened, cut and pasting, plagiarism and what have you, which is yes. easy to spot. Particularly in its current incarnation, you know, ChatGPT can write stuff that's very hard. It'll pick from different sources that would be very yes. hard to sort of flag as plagiarism or created by someone other than the person that's presenting it. That
and
is
the problem. Then, Greg,
yes,
is for a lot of universities, their own staff wouldn't be up to speed with this.
Precisely,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People who've been there 10, 15, 20, 30 years who may have, you know, studied themselves in a different generation. So there's a huge task of work within the third level sector to be able to educate staff, to be able to recognize this in their daily interaction with student content.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first of all, you have to bring them up to that level of understanding. Two, there's also, as we said earlier, you know, that using AI effectively is actually a benefit in the sense that when it's done legitimately and when you teach students research skills, obviously they're going to be able to use those mm-hmm. in their own lives. So it's not that we don't want to be able to educate students in how to effectively use AI. It's a question of doing it where it's transparent, where you can see where the students' own creativity, own analytical skills have been used so that you can give students credit for the development of those skills.
Yes, now the problem doesn't start at third level. I understand this is an article yeah. focusing on that. At what point do we start discussing seriously people that are qualifying with points to certain courses that have lent on AI in the second level or even the first level? Do you know what I mean? Like, this is a problem I think we need to start from the bottom up.
Oh, you're absolutely correct, Greg, because over the last number of years, particularly at second level, where new curriculum have been developed, part of that has been, you know, where continuous assessment processes have been used, where students now can get 20% or 40% of the actual grade in a Leaving Cert subject for material that is submitted. Now it is assessed by external examiners in many cases, but effectively we are moving to try and balance the assessment process, you know, in our school system away from just having a terminal exam, sitting with a pen in an exam hall for 3 hours. But the minute you do that, and the minute you allow students to submit work generated at home that is then submitted in school and then passed on for assessment, we have the exact same problem that yeah. you talked about.
And the thing is, finally, Brian, we don't need all students to be doing this for it to be a problem. A cohort of students, a 10%, 5%, I don't know what the level might be,
yes.
who are successfully yes. doing it, skew the system. Take spaces if they're even really intelligent, how do you undo yeah. a year of cheating, if you know what I mean? So it doesn't take an awful lot of students to start employing AI to skew the system is the point I was trying to make
there. Oh, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
But it raises the issue. Again, I think it's back to how do we educate the education system, the teaching force at every level, to be able to understand what students are capable of becoming, of doing on an ongoing basis as AI develops, and then enable them to be able to use their own skills to ensure that fairness is maintained across the board, as you say. Because yeah. even if it's only 5 or 10% using it illegally or in a way that's hidden, then obviously it skews the entire system. So this is going to be an ongoing problem. I think, Greg, we will be talking about this into our old age. I really do.
OK, Brian, listen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you and I look forward to our chats.
Thanks, okay. Greg. Good morning to
Take you. Care. Brian Mooney, Guidance Counsellor and Irish Times Education Columnist. Get your texts and comments in whilst we listen to the news and obituary notices, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 07491 25,000, and keep your comments going if you're watching the show as well.